to Rock Under Fire.
Hey.
We're at episode 18.
18.
We're dropping like flies, man. We went from 3 co-hosts to 4, back to 3, and now we're at 2.
That is right. Patrick had to take a plane. His flight got changed last possible second because we were going to get dumped on here in Jersey. We're getting 18 inches of snow like starting tomorrow night. Pat couldn't make it. I don't know where Tracy is. So we got to work twice as freaking hard now.
That's right. That's right.
But we've been doing this for our entire lives, so it shouldn't be too hard.
Yeah.
We can bullshit.
The podcast is almost a year old, but our continuing dialogue has been going on since somewhere in the mid-70s, I guess.
Yeah, we'll just keep on talking about Kiss.
At some point, we knew that this was going to happen where we had all of these topics lined up for the podcast, and we were going to do this topic and that topic, and this week is going to be this, that week's going to be that. And then we knew at some point we were going to come to this place where, okay, we have like 2 months worth of openings and topics. What are we going to do?
Yeah.
And it became, what do? We have no topics. And, I mean, for once, episode 18, we really did not have a topic. So we were going to take a segment that we had called Gun to the Head, which is what? Usually runs no more than 5 minutes.
Right.
Where we imagine, okay, somebody's holding you at gunpoint. Put a gun up to your head. Is it this or that? Is it Judas Priest or Iron Maiden? Quick, come to a decision.
Mm-hmm.
Have you made your decision for Christ? Because it's fuck or walk.
Is this in 2017 or 1985, this question?
Yeah. But anyway, we're like, let's just do Gun to the Head. We none of us could come up with anything. I mean, we had ideas, but none of them were really good for what's, you know. There was one. I was like, nah, I don't want to do that.
Blame me. I've brought so little to the table for this podcast in the way of ideas.
Yeah, but you brought the majority of what's going on. I mean, the what's going on segment is pretty much you.
I'm always good at the what's going on.
That's your segment.
Today will be no different. Today will be no different.
But nonetheless, we have stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
By way of the news, is a few articles that I read this morning. I really had to double check and fact check and make sure that it was real. But we'll get to that in a little bit. For anybody that's just joining us, if you've listened to the first 2 minutes of this show and you're still with us, then more power to you. You're a better man than me. And if you're female, then you're still a better man than me. As I would have dropped off by now.
Hang in there.
Yeah, yeah.
We get better as we go.
We're a rock and roll podcast.
We do not focus
on any one subject. Some podcasts focus on one artist, one band. We cover 7 decades of rock and roll and all that it entails, good and bad. We take a different subject every other week because we are a bi-weekly podcast. We run 2 episodes a month, and we dissect and analyze everything, every aspect of our topic, as much as we can.
Mm-hmm. Did more than one person say that the episode was a failure?
It's more than one person? No. I think we have a total of 4. We're down to 5 listeners now.
I think we're down to five. Is anybody out there?
All 5 of our listeners.
All right. Well, this is for you 5.
Yeah.
Tonight. Working very hard for
you. We'll have to address the state of the podcast soon and how much longer this is going to continue. But that'll be left for off the air. Anyway, so what is going on?
It's just me and you, bro.
But anyway.
So I had a musical dream last night, man.
Did you?
Yeah. I never remember my dreams. You do, right? You're pretty good with that.
I'm usually pretty good with remembering dreams. I remember a lot of my musical dreams.
Hmm. Yeah. I don't know. I'm like, whenever the subject, and I'm fascinated by the subject, comes up of people like analyzing their dreams and what they dreamt, I'm always completely lame. I've never anything to bring to that conversation because I never remember anything I dream. But last night, Nicole, my girlfriend, had to wake up to take a pee in the middle of the night. I guess it woke me up, but I was at a piano singing Bye Bye Love, Everly Brothers, Not the Cars, with Phyllis Diller. That was my musical dream last night. Yeah, of all people.
Yeah. Phyllis Diller. Had one of those of all people dreams, but I'm trying to remember who it was. And this was only about 2 weeks ago. and I can't remember who it is. I wish I could, but maybe as the show goes on, I'll remember who was in my dream. And it was one of those weird scenario dreams where you would never be like, what am I doing in this situation?
Yeah.
And why is this person in that situation with me?
Yeah. She was at the piano, and I remember being a little annoyed because I thought she was stepping on me vocally for some reason. I was having a hard time getting in. Then Nicole woke me up, and I never would have remembered it otherwise.
One of the coolest dreams I ever had, man, was this was back in the 90s, and this was when, you know, Hooters and Live Animals was just getting together, and we were still jamming with Live Animals.
Right.
And we had...
That's our old cover band,
by the way.
We still
had our original bands, and it was North Exit and Hooters, and we were still doing all that. And I had a dream that... And the Stones' Bridges to Babylon tour was coming to Giant Stadium that week.
All right.
This was... Okay, so this places us in 1997.
Okay.
All right, in the fall of 97, because that's when the first leg of Bridges to Babylon was. Mm. All right. Why do I know that? I have all this useless information at my fingertips, and it's just, hey, sometimes it comes in handy, like right now.
Yeah.
And other times, it's just useless information. But the dream was that we were going to open for the Stones at Giant Stadium. And it was one of those like all night dreams that just seemed to go on and on and on.
Were we actually at the stadium? Or
we were on the stage with Keith Richards.
Oh, we were?
Doing a sound check during the day of the concert, and it was just like, that's how real it was. It was like one of those, like, you know what, it's just those dreams that just seem to go on all night.
Yeah.
And like you'll wake up.
Well, not really, because I don't remember shit from my dreams.
Right. But
I'll take your word
you'll
for
like fall asleep, and you'll dream, and you'll dream forever, and then you'll wake up, and then you'll fall asleep again, and you'll fall asleep back into the dream.
Mm.
It was one of those. And we were on stage at Giant Stadium during the day. It was bright and sunny, and we were doing a sound check, all psyched up. It was going to get dark. We were going to go on stage and open for the Stones, and Keith is there, and he's tuning up, and he's doing his thing, and we're supposed to do I don't know how well opening acts get treated by the Stones, but we were on stage for a sound check. That's what it was. That's what the dream was, man. And I was like, holy shit, man. I can't believe this is happening, man. And Keith Richards is right there, and I could go over and talk to him if I want.
Yeah. You know? Those Stones fans didn't treat Prince too well, I tell you that much. But
whatever the reality of the situation is in terms of how the Stones treat their opening acts or how opening acts get treated.
With the fans, not the Stones themselves.
Oh, with the fans.
Yeah.
Oh, well,
in
I don't
that
know.
Case.
But as far as just this no-name band gets to open for the Stones, that's what the dream was.
Were you nervous? Do you remember how you felt?
You know, I've had a lot of dreams, man, where we were about to go on stage and like... There's no cables. There's no mic. You know, like how we used to mic up the amps.
Yeah.
Like we forgot the mics, or we forgot this, or we forgot that.
Oh, panic situation.
Or it's a total panic situation where
that sounds about right.
Like all my guitar strings break, or something terrible happens, man. Where we're about to go on, and that's just when we were playing in the cover band, right?
Yeah.
But I've had that dream more than once.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny, man.
That's, yeah.
I've told you this before, too, man. I believe it when they say that we only use like 2% of our brains or something like that, like
right.
in our waking life, because I've had dreams of songs, fantastic songs that don't exist in real life. I remember a dream where I don't know who I was hanging out with, but they said, yeah, this is the new Aerosmith album. And they put the album on, and it was not a song that currently exists at all from Aerosmith, but it was an awesome song, you know, fully formed, fully fleshed out, you know, vocals, chorus, solo, and it doesn't exist, and it's there in my fucking brain somewhere.
Did you dream an entire Kiss song that doesn't exist?
I'm sure I did, dude. I've done that more than once, dude.
Yeah,
more than once.
I did too.
Dreamt entire song, good songs, too, that it don't exist. They're in there.
This leads me into
something
I was going to talk about. But yeah, I've actually written entire songs. I've dreamt songs, entire songs that don't exist. And then I've like woken up and like wrote down the lyrics that I was hearing in a dream. And then I'd get a guitar and I would just like literally find the notes.
Fades quick, man.
And I've written entire songs.
Yeah.
Like two or three songs that I've written came out of dreams.
You got to do that right away.
Entire songs, man.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're good with that shit. You're better.
One of the dreams, and I don't remember if it was me or you, but one of us had a dream about there was a Kiss song that we had never heard, And it came, like, it sounded like it came from Love Gun or something.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, dude. It was like, I heard Paul Stanley's voice, and I heard Ace's guitar, and it was nothing we've ever heard before. It wasn't real, so I know it was like fictional, but it came from the dream, and it was like, awesome.
Yeah,
it
might have been me.
I think it was you. But anyway, so fast forward to real life. This is real. We're no longer in the dream state. There is a new project called Classic 78. This is for the KISS fans. We've gotten away from KISS for the last 6-7 episodes, and we did that purposely because it was so KISS heavy in our first 5 or 6 episodes.
And there's so many KISS podcasts out there, like, what are we going to talk about that they haven't 100 times?
Right. But I will mention this. It's called Classic 78. It's a couple of KISS fans, like us, who understand every little nuance of all four original members of KISS. They have got them down. Their voices, their mannerisms, the way they play their instruments.
You're talking about the cover band.
Straight down
not the cover
to
band.
The production techniques of Eddie Kramer.
Okay.
Or, you know, even when Neil Bogart produced Dressed to Kill or Kenny, you know, was it Richie Wise?
Wise and Kerner.
Yeah. But anyway, there's this 6-song EP called Classic 78. They have written 6 brand new songs, and they have channeled the styles and sound and production of 70s KISS.
Yeah, this isn't KISS covers. These are original songs, but they sound so much like KISS.
You will not believe your ears. It's like they basically said, let's imagine that the 78 solo albums didn't come out. Let's imagine that KISS did, in fact, release a follow-up to Love Gun in 1978, and this is what it would sound like. And if you close your eyes, you would swear that this is a 1978 KISS album. KISS has not put out music this good since Love Gun. This is better than any KISS music put out since Love Gun.
And I don't know why, if these guys can get that sound, that
why
KISS
can't KISS get that sound? Yeah. Well, we know that as far as like the their age and stuff, you know, age affects your voice. So there's obviously a strain on Paul's voice. Yeah, I mean, nobody sounds the way they did when they were in their early 20s.
But even the music.
Yeah.
Let alone the voice.
Exactly. Just the production.
Yeah.
Just the production,
right,
man. Holy crap. It's like if Dressed to Kill and Rock and Roll Over had a baby. This is what this sounds like. It's called Classic 78. You can only get it on iTunes or I forgot what other. I mean, look it up. Go to their website. You can find them on Facebook. They are not paying for this. This is not a paid advertising. I'm doing this out of the kindness of my heart. And as two KISS freaks, okay, that we are, that's how excited about this I got when I first heard this.
Are any of our 5 listeners KISS fans? Might they?
There are some KISS fans out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are a few.
Look it up, then lick it up.
Yeah. So
speaking of lick it up, though, and I don't mind saying it. I was listening to 3 Sides, you know,
right?
3 Sides of the Coin.
Shout out to Mike Brandvold and Tommy Summers.
There you go, boys. You got a good show. You mentioned this to me,
Mark Cicchini.
So I looked it up. They had an interview with this a Black KISS fan, right? I can't imagine what that. Well, that's what his whole book is about, right? He has this book called "Kiss My Black Ass,"
right,
about what it's like to be black and into KISS. But weirdly, the guy's favorite KISS. I can't wrap my mind around this. His favorite album, he said, was Asylum. His second favorite was Lick It Up, and he doesn't dig Rock and Roll Over. Help me.
All right, I'll help you understand that. I don't agree. I mean, we don't agree with him. But I mean, we like 70s stones more than 60s. I mean, I don't know about you.
I'd rather say
Exile.
But.
I mean, I'd go with Exile, Goat's Head Soup, Sticky Fingers over Aftermath or Between the Buttons. They're both great albums, man. But I mean, how many generations are into KISS now? At least 3, 4, okay? At least three generations.
I'm just trying to imagine somebody seeing Tears Are Falling, you know, the video of Asylum for the first time.
If it's the first thing you're exposed to.
That's their first
imagine
exposure.
Imagine being first exposed to Kiss in 1985 and Tears Are Falling. I mean, I know a lot of people that I mean, like Brian. Brian's first experience with Kiss was the Asylum period.
But you know? He's still a traditional old school Kiss guy at heart.
I don't know about that. I don't know about that. I don't know how old school he reached. I don't know how far back his reach goes, man. I think his initial experience with Kiss was in the mid 80s, and that was the first music. So I mean, it's kind of natural to go with the first stuff you're really exposed to. That's the stuff that's closest to your heart in terms of how you relate to that music and your own experience with it, I guess.
I can't see picking up Asylum for the first time. It's your first Kiss record, or Crazy Nights, and saying, I love this band. This music is so good, when it's clearly inferior to what they did up to 1979.
But, bro, we were into that stuff. We were so into that stuff when it came out.
But that stuff's not that stuff. That's not Destroyer and Rock and Roll All Over.
No, but we still loved it when it came out. I mean, yeah, years later, we went back and said, well, what were we thinking?
I mean, oh yeah, in the 80s, I mean, we did love it.
You loved it a little bit more than I did. Yeah. There was stuff that Gene was putting out in the 80s that I was just like not on board with.
Yeah,
and
that is true.
As Kiss freaks, man, and we go back to the beginning. We went through the 80s with Kiss. We survived that whole hair band thing that was going on, and where Kiss was following trends. Kiss was no longer Kiss.
Mm-hmm.
There was no longer a Kiss sound. The Kiss sound, it evolved into something. Paul was carrying the band through the 80s, so it was very Paul Stanley centric in the 80s. So when you were getting stuff like Heaven's on Fire and Crazy Nights and Tears Are Falling, Who Wants to Be Lonely and Thrills in the Night, it was very like Paul carried them through the 80s, okay? And that became their sound. It was almost like a Paul Stanley solo band in the 80s. And I mean, we got excited about it. So I can imagine somebody that's into Bon Jovi and Rat and Motley Crue and that whole, you know, what later became known as hair bands.
Yeah.
During that period when you were in it and you were into that and you heard Kiss, you know, and you heard these albums and they were big at the time, you got excited about it.
Yeah, if you're born in 1980. You're born in 1980 as opposed to 1970 like we were.
Yeah.
You're a young, impressionable kid, and all the hair metal's happening. You're loving it all, and Kiss is right there among them.
Right.
But I don't know. Listen to any live Kiss concert from 76 or 77, how crunchy, kick, fucking ass dirty, heavy rock and roll it is. And then listen to the Crazy Nights tour, and so it's not the same, man.
Yeah,
they
were following trends, man. And, who's the hot producer? Ron Nevison. Ron Nevison did Heart. Ron Nevison did The Ultimate Sin, Ozzy, you know. Let's get Ron Nevison, you know.
Yep.
Who's the hottest songwriter? Let's get Desmond Child.
Yeah.
Let's get Juan Bovar, you know, or whatever his name is. Jean Bovar, or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, let's get him. Adam Mitchell. Let's get the top-notch, you know, like Aerosmith later did with Diane Warren. Like, who's the hot songwriter of the day? Who can write us hits?
Right.
Who can make us sound like Bon Jovi? Right? And that's what Kiss was doing in 1986-87. Yeah. But you know what? Guilty as charged, man. We liked it then.
Yeah, we did. It's like another band we love, R.E.M. There are people that are 90s R.E.M. fans. There are people that like Losing My Religion, Better Understand the End of the World as We Know It. I can't relate to those people either. I think they're crazy. Those people are out there too, though.
Yeah.
R.E.M. is a 90s band.
So, I mean, when you have a band that spans decades, more than, you know, two, three, four decades, five decades in the case of some bands, you're going to get this cross-generational thing happening where the younger people are going to come to the band 3 decades into the band's career.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing they hear, that's their classic version of the band. As crazy as it sounds, man, Asylum, Crazy Nights, that period is classic Kiss to some.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess later on they went back and said, whoa, this stuff exists. It's like, you know, this stuff existed before. I mean, I like stuff, you know, like the Rolling Stones, Out of Our Heads, Now, 12 by 5. You know, those albums are good, man. I don't love those albums. I mean, I don't really go to grab them out of my collection and put them on. I go to Exile. I go to Goat's Head Soup. I continuously go to that era of the Stones.
Yeah.
Where some people will be like, no, man, Brian Jones era Stones is it. They died when Brian died. You know, if it's not on the London label, it's, you know, it's not classic Stones.
Yeah, whereas some people,
you know, it's just kind of like, you know. And you know what? There might be some people that exist that came into the Stones on, who knows, Steel Wheels. Who knows?
Yeah, it's, yeah.
There's got to be some crazy people out there that for you know, the Stones, their best albums are Steel Wheels and Steel Wheels and Voodoo Lounge, you know?
Yeah.
I can't imagine who they are.
They're out there, though, man. You know it, man. Yeah, they turned on MTV.
Shit.
So mixed emotions. And they're like, who are these guys?
So you saw, you were at a show this week.
Yeah, man. You know, I go back to my top 40 favorite artists/bands list that I painstakingly compiled, and very high up, I believe it's number 8. It was one of my one of my favorite bands in the last 20 years is the Flaming Lips. You know, they got this new album, Oxymelody, out, and let me say this about the Lips, man. They're legit artists, and they don't give a fuck about pleasing the fans or doing the same thing over and over again or what people are saying about them. And on their last two records, they've really changed. They've gotten mellow, you know. The tempo of the songs has gotten slower. They've gotten largely away from guitar and drums. It's just the percussion is a lot of like just slick tweets, and it's all like keyboard generated, you know.
Are they doing this? Is this kind of similar to what Radiohead did when they did Kid A? Can you connect it to that at all?
I can see that. Yeah, you know. You know, the singer got went through a painful divorce, Wayne Coyne, and he released this album, this bumming album called The Terror. I love it. I love all this shit, you know. But I know people, you know, like another buddy of ours, Mark, loves the Lips, is not liking the new stuff, you know. I think he needs to give it another chance. I love this new record. It took a couple listens, but I love it. It's still trippy as hell. It's, you know, it's some of the most psychedelic shit out there. You got to try it. But I'm wondering, going into the show Thursday night at the Terminal 5 in the city, I'm like, are they going to do a lot of this? How are these songs going to translate? You know, this real mellow stuff. Are they going to do this stuff? Or are they playing New York City? They're going to please the fans? Aren't they going to rock the F out? Like, what are they going to do? You know, and how are these songs going to translate? Dude, they knocked my head off. I'm so happy with that show. They, you know, Nicole went in like, ah, this hippie shit. She came out saying it was the greatest. What a powerful, powerful, gigantic sound. I've never heard a more powerful drum sound from any band live than them the other night, dude. The drummer sounded like John fucking Bonham, dude. Like, the new songs came to life, dude, and they rocked the F out. I mean, like, you know how you say about Bruce, like the non-believers, just go see him live.
Right.
I defy anyone to see the Lips live, and you'd be the holy shit. Hey, bring it, man. And they did a lot, and they really pleased the crowd. Did a lot of the old stuff that we all love from Soft Bulletin and Yoshimi.
I believe it.
Yeah, man. And, you know, when you see a band in New York City, Terminal 5, you know you're getting their A-game. Everybody's, you know, it's New York City, man. You know,
sure.
They're bringing it.
Anybody that plays New York City knows they're on trial.
Yeah, you know. So you could tell they were just going for broke. They added another drummer. They got two drummers. They added another guitar player. I mean, they had a huge, huge, powerful sound, man. Like, the Who level powerful, man. I'm telling you, like, wow. Really good. But, you know, playing New York City, man, contrast that with somewhere like the Starland Ballroom, where a lot of, like, musicians get out of the limo and they look around, where the fuck are we, and they mail it in. I've seen some lame
Starland,
shows
you there. Get like Yngwie Malmsteen playing Starland Ballroom. It's a totally different, it's a different caliber artist.
I saw Jane's Addiction there, and I thought that they kind of mailed it in. I was like, you know what, they're playing
it's,
in New Jersey
where
set,
they're playing.
Yeah.
Any artist for that matter. It's why I refuse to go see Bob Dylan in New Jersey anymore. I have not seen Bob in Jersey in 15 years.
Yeah.
Because he just sucks in Jersey. There, I said it. I'm a Bob Dylan fan. Anybody that knows me, man, I said it. Bob Dylan sucks when he plays in New Jersey.
Well, you know what? I'm hesitant to spend money at all on a Bob Dylan live ticket, man. I guess I will again.
Yeah.
You know? I'm never say never. I love the man. But I'm almost to the point, bro, where I'm saying he's done as a live performer, and I've been very, very forgiving of him, you know?
Yeah,
I'll still buy his records, dude. But
I'll still buy his records. I just won't go see him live.
Yeah, I don't know if I will. I will eventually.
I would say I will see him at least one more time. But you know, who knows? It's this whole thing goes on and on. As we watch our rock icons get older and older and older, and every time we see them, it's like, okay, that's got to be the last time, and then there's always a next time, and that's a good thing. But in the case of Bob, I guess 15 years ago, I said I'm done seeing Bob live. And that includes New York, just because of I'm not going to get into why, but that's another conversation. I don't want to keep going on subjects that have nothing to do with our topic.
Pains me to say this, man. Show's called Rock Under Fire. Bob, you're the fucking greatest. You're done live. You're done. Save some space for the blast. Okay.
Let me ask you, though. Let me get back to the lips. The Flaming Lips. Obviously, I'm not a fan the way you are.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know their catalog the way, I know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard a couple albums.
Yeah.
Didn't grab me the way it grabbed you. You know, I respect them. I know that they're important.
Mm-hmm.
I know they're revered. That said, I don't know. I mean, it's just for whatever reason, their sound, I just did not click with me.
Yeah.
Okay. That said, I do know that they've been around 3 decades, at least.
Yeah,
did they go back to the 90s, at least, right? Did they go back to the 80s? Did they go even that far back, or is it, I mean...
The earliest album I have, I don't think, is from the 80s.
Is it the early 90s, close, right? Bro. Early 90s,
close,
right?
They're at least
as old as Pearl Jam, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that said...
I'm sure they were together in the 80s. Maybe their albums weren't out yet. But.
All right. So that said... The fact that you, is it safe to say, man, that they haven't yet reached that period where they're an old band with, the first 5 years of their career is what everybody comes to hear, or they're actually still an evolving band, still making vital music that is just as relevant as their early stuff, and they're still a band in transformation and evolution, as opposed to just looking back at their mm-hmm. past and let's reach in the bag and play the oldies?
All of the above, bro.
Yeah.
They are still evolving. They're still making great new music. The new album is effing great. Haven't said that. Their best years are behind them. I don't think they're ever going to do a Yoshimi again or something.
That's what I want.
Again.
That's what I wanted to know. Yeah.
So, yeah. And I was going into the show, they're on the wrong side of 50 now. Maybe they're starting to get up there,
right.
But they played very youthful. And it was me. I never would have predicted that was the best lip show I saw, but it was. That was the best lip show I ever saw.
Because the way you were talking about going into the show and after having heard the album and you don't know what it's going to be and how they're going to do this, or you made it sound like a band in their first 5 years of their career and they've just released their blockbuster album, the one that's going to blow them wide open.
Mm-hmm.
And every celebrity's there and every critic. It's just like you made it sound like, and I was just like, damn, man, they're still putting out vital work, man. What is the consensus? Does there seem to be a consensus among the fan base, man?
There seems to be a genuine split, I think.
That there is still relevant work coming out of these guys?
They're always a sunny, positive, optimistic band, and they've taken this dark turn, and there are people that don't like it. And people like me that are still on board.
And do you attribute it to Wayne's, just his personal life, man? And
I
the direction that
Wayne's
his songwriting is taking?
Personal life. And again, the fact that they're not going to stay in one spot. They're just not.
Well, yeah. They're one of the chameleon artists. They're one of the, they're a chameleon band.
They refuse. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're connected to the core, man. The core is it's a conduit into something much higher than we could understand creatively, man. And there are those artists that are connected to the core, and even without having gone through their catalog, I know this, man.
Yeah.
They're definitely one of those bands.
I was depressed when the house lights went on. To the spiral scratch.
This morning I woke up to this news. Scrolling my phone, I don't remember where it was. May have been Facebook. This cat, Ed Sheeran. I mean, I've heard the name in the last couple years.
What's the significance?
Well, Ed Sheeran apparently broke, was about to break or broke. I don't know what the outcome of it was, but I think he broke the Beatles records on the pop charts for singles. Apparently a bunch of records that the Beatles held in the 60s. When the Beatles, you know, touched down at JFK, that whole... Most of 1964, the Beatles owned the pop charts. Mm-hmm. You could look at the top 10 and 6, 7, maybe 8 of them. 8 songs out of the top 10 would be Beatles songs. And a lot of the criticism of the Beatles was that, oh, you know, the DJs favored the Beatles. They were playing, you know, if the Beatles put out an album, they wouldn't just play the single. They would play everything, you know.
Shred of truth, probably. But
I mean, they were all singles at some point.
Yeah.
Okay, they were all 45 singles at some point. And there's a lot to be discussed. There's a lot to be said about that. And we're definitely going to do a Beatles episode in a few months. So we're going to save the extensive discussion related to those, that whole period, for that episode. But, you know, not to mention that the Beatles, there were three labels releasing Beatles music at the same time. You know, there was VJ, who the Beatles ended up in litigation because VJ went bankrupt. They ended up on Capitol in the United States, you know, so there was another label. They were all releasing Beatles music at the same exact time.
Not in 64.
So, in 64.
64.
Yeah. So, it should be no surprise, as big as they were, man, that there was so much, there was all this competition and everybody's, you know, payola and just the whole thing with, you know, of course they were going to play all this Beatles music. You know, it wasn't just one.
But they weren't giving the people what they wanted to. Because Beatlemania consumed the entire country.
Right, right. So along comes 2017 and digital streaming, which we got into extensively, I think, in episode 5. And then again, we got into it a little bit during our music licensing episode. And Ed Sheeran has broken the Beatles' singles record on the UK charts. 9 out of the top 10 songs this week are Ed Sheeran songs. And the top 20, 16 of the top 20 songs are Ed Sheeran songs.
That's incredible. Now what about here? It's got to be,
I looked at the charts for here, and he only has the number one song here. He doesn't.
Nothing else in the top 20.
Nothing like that going on. Not nearly what's going on in the UK is going on in the States with Ed Sheeran. As far as I know, but you know what? I might be wrong. He might have other records here in the States. I don't know. Now this, from here on, for the rest of the show, this we're boldly going where no other podcaster has gone before. We are going to boldly discuss Ed Sheeran authoritatively. Without knowing jack shit about
him. Yeah, I don't know about authoritatively. But I spent about a half hour looking at him and his stuff before.
I have not listened to a single talking about Sheeran album. Okay? And this was a very last minute decision as I was driving over here that we were going to talk about Ed Sheeran. It was just like, it just hit me. I called you. I said,
he's breaking records. That's an impressive statistic, dude. Probably symptomatic of how little there is out there now. How empty the entire field is, the fact that how many songs out of the top 20 in Britain are his?
Well, here's my immediate thought about the whole thing. In 1964, I mean, we weren't around, obviously. And it's the same model as 1974. In 1984, for that matter, an album came out. Think about like your favorite bands back in the 70s and 80s, okay? More so the 80s because we were older and we were old enough to buy our own albums.
Yeah.
Your favorite band announces their new album. You first read about it in a magazine, okay? Because there's no internet. We read about it usually in Rolling Stone, Circus, or Hit Parader.
Yeah.
One of those three.
Yep.
In the metal years, it was obviously Circus or Hit Parader.
Absolutely.
Unless Zeppelin was on the cover of Rolling Stone or the Stones, and I'd go out and get Rolling Stone. Okay, but we usually heard about a new album in one of those magazines.
Sure.
Every once in a while, you hear Metal Shop or, you know, Metal News with Eddie Trunk or something like that. But The album is slated to come out. Slated was always the word they used. Mm-hmm. Slated for release in 6 weeks. You know, April 23rd is coming out. But what happens between that press release and the release of the album? What happens?
It gets pushed back, and very often the title of the album changes.
Well, yeah, that too, man. But you get the single release, okay? And the single is usually what was usually released about a month before the album release.
Yeah.
Okay, so you'd either hear the single on the radio, and a lot of people would go out to their record store and buy the 45 single. Okay, because they couldn't wait. And on the other side was the flip side, and you get another song that was going to be on the album.
Yeah, who could forget Van Halen Jump before 1984 came out.
Yeah, so
Turbo Lover before Turbo came
locked
out.
In, locked in, locked was in, the single, locked in. Yeah. Was the, okay, but back then they started putting the singles on a cassette. So you could at the time still get cassette singles.
Yeah, I never bought one of those.
There was tangible goods. Okay, tangible product that you could hold in your hands and take home, and you know it would. Okay, what would you pay for a single? Like $1, $1.45, you know, whatever it was, a couple dollars.
Could be any more than that.
And that was the lifespan of a single would last about 3 months from release to the end, that to where it's dead, and then they would release another one, the second single.
Yeah.
Okay. And if the album was a success, maybe you'd get a third single, depending on how successful the album was. And in the 80s, there was a trend of pushing the album as far as it could go. That's why in the 80s, like, they started, Thriller had 7-8 singles on it. You know, Born in the USA had 7 singles on it. An Innocent Man by Billy Joel had 7 singles on it. Huey Lewis Sports, you know, all of these albums where they were just like pushing the album as long as the duration of an album, the lifespan of an album, just kept going and going and going for 2 years.
The trees keep producing fruit, keep on picking.
Whereas in the 70s, you were releasing 2-3 studio albums per year.
Yeah.
Again, the lifespan of a single would be a couple months at least. All right. So, recently, in the last 10 years, you'd get the single sometimes 2-3 months before an album release, like Lady Gaga would do. She'd release her first single 3 months before the album release. And by the time the album is out, there's already been two or three singles out, you know? There's already two or three singles out. Okay, so there's that approach. But in the age of digital streaming, where people can buy the entire album, okay, stream the entire album, or they can stream songs. How do you explain a guy releasing a new album, right, 1 week, and the same week he releases the album, 9 of those songs from that same album are all considered singles on the charts?
He didn't formally release all these songs before the release of the album.
Exactly. So this is based a lot of it on digital streaming, and people streaming these individual songs. Now, I also take into consideration that there is high number of sales on as far as tangible product.
Yeah.
People are buying his albums much the same way that they're buying Adele's albums. Okay, there is a significant increase in album sales.
Is this what the Billboard Top 100 is based on anymore? Is it based on? I mean,
it's not.
You know more about this than me,
man. Largely, I don't know much more than you because this is where we cross over into dinosaur territory.
Yeah,
you know, because we don't keep up. We don't profess to keep up with what's going on. This is, you know, we are largely dinosaurs, and we're a podcast that kind of sits around and bitches and moans about the state of the industry right now.
I'm going to do more of it before this one's over.
But, in this episode, we're just trying to come to terms with this idea that he broke any record at all. Yeah, I mean, the model is different. The model is 100% different in 2017 than it was in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And even the beginning of the 90s, the model is so different that if somebody hits, if they're just streaming individual songs and enough people are doing it and they're doing it individually, is that how it works? I mean, are these songs getting passed off as singles? That there's so many that they're basing the top 10 based on streaming? Is it a combination of streaming and album sales, tangible product being sold? However it's
gotta
be. However that's, it works
that's
out.
New, that's the new model, I'm sure, man.
It fits right in with this millennial thing of this whole thing of like instant gratification, everything at the press of a button. I liken it to, you know, nobody hitting more than 50 home runs for 30, 40 years until the steroid era. And then, you know, the one time George Foster hit 52 home runs in 1977. Nobody had done that for 30, 40 years. And then all of a sudden, in one decade, everybody's hitting 60-plus home runs a season.
Yep. Okay? Too much of a good thing.
Is it like, you know, going into a room full of blind people and one person with 20/20 vision comes in and gets an award for having the best eyesight in the room?
Yeah. The kingdom of the blind, the one-eyed man is God.
Yeah. So
he's the top or most of the pop or most right now. I mean, talk about being a dinosaur. I in recent months, I say to myself, whose songs are even on the charts now? Like, I can't even think of a popular song on the radio that catches me. I'm that far out of it, you know, in terms of the mainstream, what they're into. And it's all about Ed Sheeran, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and the guy's obviously talented.
I wouldn't take that away
from him. He's obviously talented. But I mean, what is his style? I mean, is he rock? Is he considered pop? What is he considered?
Is it not rock at all?
It reminds me of, and a little bit I've heard, and I heard that big song that's out right now. I've already forgot the name of it. The song that's whatever the number one song is right now.
Is it Shape of You?
The Shape of You, yeah.
Shape of You,
and it had that, you know, that romantic, sweet talking guy thing that women apparently love. Remember in the late 90s when, you know, rock music really took a nosedive, man?
Sure.
And you started getting like Matchbox 20 and Three Doors Down, and
that's when the whole thing took a nosedive and it's never come back.
Rock music was not rock music anymore, and it was just like this really like I don't want to say syrupy, because the syrupy shit started like in the
you can say morning. Syrupy. That's one of the words I was going to use.
But you don't remember when Matchbox 20 was considered rock in the late 90s, even though it really wasn't rock. But then you had like Rob Thomas at the turn of the decade, you know, somewhere around 03, 04, 2005. He puts out that song, Lonely No More. I don't want to be lonely anymore. And it's got like a hook. It's got a dance beat. You could dance to it. Right. It's got all these harmonies. It's real melodic. The girls love it. It was obviously purposely written to appeal to an audience outside of his own audience. You know, he was trying to appeal to, you know, people that were listening to Ricky Martin at the time, you know?
Yeah.
And I believe he achieved that because he became this crossover artist where, you know, he can mix and mingle with the same people that are listening to Avril Lavigne. Or give me an artist. Give me, I don't know, somebody that was big 10 years ago. Whoever.
Adam Levine.
Adam Levine. There you go.
Speaking of Adam Levine.
Yeah. All right. So the Levines. So the Levines.
Ed Sheeran sounds like he came right off of The Voice. I mean, can we blame Adam Levine and Gwen Stefani for this? He sounds like every character on that show now. Playing guest, these syrupy, innocuous, castrated fucking songs,
like
bro.
Like he's fictional. Like you were watching like 90210 or Melrose Place, and they went to whatever the hot concert was in town that week, and they create this fictional character. Like if he didn't exist, somebody would invent him. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's this is, hey, case in point, man. Rock is fucking dead.
It really is.
It's dead.
Yeah, the fact that this guy is on top of the world really is symptomatic of how empty everything is. I listened to it's yeah, I'm sorry. It's everything that's wrong with music today. If you listen to the songs, bro, they don't go anywhere. The tempo doesn't change. The mood doesn't change. You know, like songs have no clear verse chorus anymore, or bridge, or solo, or the mood.
They just
kind of
hover, man.
They just go,
they just
in
hover.
One direction, and all his tunes do that. They hover, right? Sometimes it's kind of a little rap, you know, but it doesn't rock at all. It doesn't go anywhere. My penis is 2 inches smaller just from listening to it. I spent about a half hour listening to some of his tunes, and there's no way any guy with balls would listen to that. You know what? And I'm, you know what?
That's
I mean,
the litmus test. That should be the litmus test, man, for if it's right there, you know?
And I got to tell you, you know, I come on this show. Part of what we do is criticize music. We put people under fire. I love it, you know? But really behind it all, I really am kind of like God bless you. I mean, God bless you, Ed Sheeran, Justin Bieber, John Bon Jovi, the artists that I don't like. If people are paying you to, you know, listen to your art, you know, God bless you, you know.
Sure, man, sure. Nobody's taking that away.
I'm just a dude sitting in a living room in New Jersey shouting into the void.
We're the ones sitting around bitching about
it. That's behind it all.
They're laughing all the way to the bank.
Well, you know, I wouldn't do anything different if I was you guys.
What are we doing? Where's our album?
Having done that, you guys aren't all that. Not all that. Suck it.
Right. Right. I mean, I'd rather talk like, you know, remember in the 70s in the NFL, those old NFL films? This is off topic.
Yeah. With the awesome,
my favorite thing
with
to
the
talk
awesome
about.
Music.
When you'd see like those old, like the Astrodome, the Houston Oilers, Love You Blue, Earl Campbell, you know, Bum Phillips, you know, and like the old Astrodome and the Steelers, like the old Three River Stadium and Riverfront Stadium.
When the uniforms got muddy. There's and mud on uniforms. Remember those days?
When they take an injured player off the field, there was always like an Oldsmobile 98 parked in the end zone.
Yeah, Three River Stadium always had several Oldsmobiles parked over on the sideline.
And every once in a while, the camera would catch them. You'd be watching the game, and you see this fucking brown Oldsmobile parked in the corner of the field.
Yeah, it was always chocolate brown. Always. How do we get here?
I just brought it up because it's just something I've been thinking about, man. And I cannot. I'll be driving. I'll randomly think of that Oldsmobile sitting in the corner of the field, man.
Yeah.
Just start cracking up. I just use it. I just use it as medicine now. I use it just like if I'm in a shitty mood, you know, I'm going out. Like last night I was going out and I was in such a crappy mood and I knew I was going to be like meeting a bunch of people out. And I was like, I got to break this mood. Otherwise I might as well just go home. You know, I'm not going to be bringing the whole party down and just because, you know, why bother going out? So I immediately took my medicine. I thought about the Oldsmobile in the corner of the fucking Three Rivers Stadium.
Yeah.
I start cracking up as I'm driving, man. Instant good mood.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
So, yeah.
Play a little
so
trick
that's
on
why. That's why I brought that up.
Yeah.
You know, I just had to get out of this Ed Sheeran crap, man. And think about the Oldsmobile 98 on the field.
It.
Yeah.
Maybe I'd like it more if I listened to him more, but I don't think so.
I think I'm going to find a picture of an Oldsmobile, and I'm going to put it on our, I'm going to put it in the embedded video for our YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the signature picture for our episode. It's going to be an Oldsmobile. What do an Oldsmobile and Ed Sheeran have in common? That'll be the question.
Yeah.
That'll be the question.
That's your riddle to solve this week, dear listeners.
What else you got? Anything else going on?
Well, it's
going
to be St. Patty's Day next week. You didn't go to Tara's today. Our good friend Tara had a St. Patty's Day party.
Did you go?
Nothing against the Irish, dude, but it's got to be my least favorite holiday, St. Patty's Day.
I had, my nephew is turning 3 on Tuesday, so we had his birthday party today.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously, and I told Tara I couldn't do that.
The only thing about Irish culture I dig is bagpipes. I love the sound of bagpipes. But I hate the drunken buffoonery, the dumb green plastic derby hats that everybody walks around. Irish soda bread sucks.
One of our 5 listeners might be Irish. You never know, man.
No offense, killed our
chances, man.
I like U2 and all.
Yeah, U2 is good.
There's no snakes in Ireland. Who wants to live there?
I never liked boiled cabbage and...
No! Well... Nah, mom makes a good corned beef and cabbage. With
I never dug that, man. I could do stuffed cabbage. But I can't do boiled cabbage. You got a green snake over there.
He's Irish.
Our
listeners don't realize that Rock Under Fire Studios is smack dab in the middle of a serpentarium. I don't know if...
We have a snake from Brooklyn, but he's Irish. He's an Irish snake from Brooklyn.
There are no Irish snakes. But he's like literally...
But that's an Irish snake. You have an Irish snake right there.
Well, getting back to my previous point, I mean, one of Ireland's claims to fame is that they have no snakes because supposedly St. Peter with his flute or something scared them away or... St. Patrick, excuse me, got rid of all the snakes, and me being an ophidiophile, which is a Greek way of saying snake lover. Another reason I'm not into it.
The lights on our mixer are green. They're Irish. The digital readout is Irish. Our levels are lighting up green. Every time I look at that, every time I talk, it lights up green. So Tara, this one's for you.
Sorry we didn't go, Tara.
But anyway, I guess that we'll make this a short episode. We're clocking in at under an hour. Are we done? Do you want to talk more?
Can't be too far under an hour, right?
No, but we're coming in. We're clocking in under an hour for the first time since like episode 4, I think.
Well, that's because we had no input from our slacker co-hosts.
Yeah.
So here we are. All right.
All right.
We'll slap 5 and put this one to bed.
Anyway, if you're still with us, like us on Facebook. Like our Facebook page. Like our Facebook page.
Like
our Facebook page. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. We can be found on YouTube. But we prefer you to listen to us on iTunes. Download the show on iTunes. Please give us a rating and a review. Nobody's doing this. This is how I know nobody gives a shit. People are just like politely liking our channel. And they'll be like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And they were like all nice in the beginning. But you know what? We've definitely hit a wall.
We're hitting rock bottom.
We definitely hit a wall. And I don't even think we're even playing to our Facebook crowd anymore, man. I don't even know if we have much of a Facebook crowd anymore. But anyway, if you're out there, we're dependent on you. The people who we don't know, the ones who are not our Facebook friends or our friends that we hang out with, who are just trying to be nice to us by liking our page. And then they say, and they turn around and don't give a shit. Yeah,
what do we got to do?
Just pacify them.
Yeah.
Tell them what they want to hear. We know that people are downloading. I know because I look at our statistics. I look at the analytics of what's going on and who's listening to our. I mean, we are getting downloads on iTunes. Okay? Somebody out there is listening. So we're dependent on you, the people who we don't know, the people who don't know us, the people that are just like scrolling around on iTunes and come across this podcast called Rock Under Fire and say, hey, what's this? We're dependent on people like you. So if you listen to the show, you know, we're a small podcast. We're trying to get an audience, man. I don't know how much longer we're going to be doing this, but we love to talk about rock and roll. We love to dissect it. We love to sit here and talk about the stupid little things that most people in the world don't give a shit about. The people that say, who cares? How much time do you want to think about the recording sessions of Beggar's Banquet? Who cares what went on in the studio on such and such a date, or who was there and who wasn't there, and who was on what track?
They're out there.
You know?
They're out
but there are people out there, man, that love conversation and debate like that. So we're dependent on people like you to help us out. If you like the show, please give us a rating and a review on iTunes.
And hang in there. Don't turn us off after 5 minutes.
Yeah, you know, we're also on something called Stitcher, and we're also on SoundCloud. So with that, follow our shit.
Look out, football, here we come. Houston Oilers, number one. Houston has the Oilers, the greatest football team. We take the ball from goal to goal like no one's ever seen. We're in the air, we're on the ground, always in control. And when you say the Oilers, you're talking Super Bowl. Cause we're the Houston Oilers, Houston Oilers, Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers, Houston Oilers, Houston Oilers number one. Bad news keeps pouring on me. Bad.